Psalms 37, verse 11. Continue your love to those who know you, your righteousness to the upright in heart. May the foot of the proud not come against me, nor the hand of the wicked drive me away. See how the evildoers lie fallen, thrown down, not able to rise.
Amen. Good job, Blake. Let's turn to Psalm 36. What does the criminal need? The word crime, or the words crime, crimes, and criminal are found only six times in the New King James Version of the Bible. But when you hear those words, you hear them on the television or the radio news or wherever you hear them, do you immediately start thinking biblically? When you read in the Bible the word wickedness or its synonyms, do you apply those passages to criminals and their crime? What do you believe are the reasons for criminal behavior? I suppose there may be many, but I want to talk about what is the root of it this morning. And do you believe that the Bible gives the reasons or perhaps even the solution? Let's take a look at Psalm 36 to see what it says about this issue. Starting with the preface, that's the part just before verse 1. To the chief musician, a psalm of David, the servant of the Lord, an oracle within my heart concerning the transgression of the wicked. There is no fear of God before their eyes. For he flatters himself in his own eyes. When he finds out his iniquity and when he hates, the words of his mouth are wickedness and deceit. He has ceased to be good, to be wise and to do good. He devises wickedness on his bed. He sets himself in a way that is not good. He does not abhor evil. I'm going to start with the preface. Psalm 36 was given to the chief musician because it was intended to be sung. And I believe that when we hear the words of this psalm and understand what is going on in it and how God operates and why He does what He does, and why people do what they do, that we will be in agreement and want to sing either this psalm or similar ones. Songs often take us on a journey, or they present us a problem to us and then show us the solution. And that's what Psalm 36 does. And who wrote the psalm according to that preface? David, the servant of the Lord. Now, did David write this before or after being king? I don't think it matters. Whether he was a boy shepherd, or whether he was a warrior in Saul's army, or whether he was the king of Israel, he would say, I am the servant of the Lord. Can you think of a nobler description? Now, all of you can say something similar to what I'm going to say about myself. I can say that I am a man, a son, a brother, a father, a husband, an American, an Oregonian, but let me be a servant of the Lord. Because nothing takes me higher. Nothing places me in a greater relationship. Nothing designates me better, as far as I'm concerned, and I hope that you would say the same about yourself, than to say, I am a servant of the Lord. Watch out, world. I am here on the Lord's business. David had no shame announcing to the world that he was the servant of the Lord. Now, I don't know if he also wrote Psalm 116 or not, but that psalmist, whoever he was, had no shame either in claiming to be a servant of the Lord. In fact, he even just seems to glory in it. And really, what greater designation can we have? In verse 16 of Psalm 116, it says, O Lord, truly I am your servant. I am your servant, the son of your maidservant. You have loosed my bonds. Okay, so now when we get into Psalm 36, starting here with verse 1, keep all this in mind. That a servant of the Lord is writing these things. He is writing these things based upon his own observations, and secondly, because the Spirit of God moved him to write the words of this powerful psalm, Psalm 36, an oracle in the heart of David. Or as the New American Standard Version says, transgression speaks to the ungodly within his heart. The wicked transgress, David says, because there is no fear of God before his eyes. He has contempt for God. For if he did fear God, knowing of God's presence and knowing of God's judgments, he would not live a life of wickedness. Not fearing God is the root of all evil and all crime. In Romans chapter 3, Paul, I believe, teaches the same thing as to what mankind's basic problem is. And starting at verse 10 of Romans 3, in machine gun fashion, Paul just pulls out a bunch of Old Testament passages and just starts firing them off. And he concludes his list in verse 18 with a quotation from Psalm 36:1. There is no fear of God before his eyes. That is, the eyes of the wicked. Lack of the fear of God tops David's list, and lack of the fear of God concludes Paul's list. Both are prominent positions or places. Not fearing God is the crown and root of wickedness. Because the whole purpose of man is to fear God and to keep his commandments. If man does not fear God, he has no restraint upon his soul. Now look what David does here in verses 1 through 4 of Psalm 36. In a sevenfold fashion, he reveals the transgressions of the wicked. He flatters himself in his iniquity. His words are wicked. He is not wise. He does not do good. He devises wickedness on his bed. He sets himself in a way that is not good. And he does not abhor evil. When he ceases to be wise and good, he does not become neutral, but evil finds the void in his heart and rushes in to fill it quickly. The wicked then become busy of how to commit more evil. They eat, drink, and sleep wickedness. He commits evil because he wants to commit evil. Not because it's been forced upon. Now, take all that Not a very good picture. And now watch what David does in the rest of the psalm. Verses 5 through 12. In verses 1 through 4, his language was rough. But in verses 5 through 12, it'll be poetic and beautiful as he talks about God and how the godly put their trust in him. Looking at the wicked gets discouraging, doesn't it? Do you ever get discouraged or maybe frightened or frustrated watching the news or reading the newspaper? I mean, there's tons of bad things going on, and I wouldn't encourage you to do it for too long. But do what David did. Yes, observe it and notice that it happens, but then quickly turn your attention to the Lord and spend more of your time thinking about God than about the evil and the sin and the crime in the world. Turn your attention to God as David did, because God's glory is true. He hates iniquity and loves righteousness. He speaks righteousness and truth. He is wise and good. He prepares righteousness for man, and he sets you in a way that is good, because he abhors evil and loves goodness. Doing that will make you feel better. Before we get into these verses, I want to just perform this experiment this week. And the first one won't be too hard to do. But find yourself in a group of people who are just talking about bad things. And watch what it does to your attitude. Then find some people, maybe even with those same people, talk about God. If it's something you can't do at work, you can't find somebody or whatever, when you get home, call some Christians or do something and just talk about God. And watch what happens to your attitude. It'll be so much different. All right, let's look at verses 5 through 9. Your mercy, O Lord, is in the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the clouds. Your righteousness is like the great mountains. Your judgments are a great deep. O Lord, you preserve man and beast. How precious is your loving kindness, O God. Therefore, the children of men put their trust under the shadow of your wings. They are abundantly satisfied with the fullness of your house. And you give them drink from the river of your pleasures. For with you is the fountain of life. In your light, we see light. In verses 1 through 4, David explained the seven sins of the wicked. Then he showed the sevenfold trust of the righteous. Starting at verse 5. They know of God's mercy. They know of God's faithfulness. They know of God's righteousness. They know of God's judgments. They know of God's protection. They know of God's loving kindness. And they know of God's providence. The difference between the wicked and the righteous. The wicked or the criminal does not fear God. But the righteous trust God. Observe in verses 4 and 5 four qualities of God. Number 1, His mercy is in the heavens. Number 2, His faithfulness is in the clouds. Number 3, His righteousness is like the great mountains. And number 4, His judgments are a great deep. David is like a painter. Starting up in the heavens. He comes down upon the clouds, and then he comes to the mountains, and then he goes down into the great deeps. As he talks about God. In fact, the song that we have is an invitation. If I remember, maybe I shouldn't say that. I didn't look to see exactly which love of God it is, but there's one of our songs about the love of God that talks about, you know, if the sky were made out of parchment. Is that, that's the one we're doing? Okay. You know, and every man a scribe by trade, and every quill, you know, were a pen, the ocean were filled with ink, to try and write about the love of God would drain the ocean dry. I think you could change the subject and say just about the truth of God, or the justice of God, or the righteousness of God, or the grace of God, or the wrath of God, and so on. And that's what David's doing here in verses 5 and 6. How long have you known God? How long have you just known the Scriptures? Have you not found that it's endless? I've been a Christian for, I think, about 29 years. Next month it'll be 29 years that I've been meditating on His Word. And if someone were to ask me, well, is it getting old? And have you discovered everything? No way. I've been preaching the gospel for 25 years. I've preached a couple thousand sermons. And I still find it thrilling just to open up the Scriptures and to discover new things, because God's mercy is in the heavens and His faithfulness reaches to the clouds. His righteousness is like the greatest of the mountains, and His judgments are like the great deep that we just can't even fathom. It's endless. And I've known of men who preach the gospel for 50, 60 years. And you ask them their opinion about God. You ask them their opinion about the Scriptures, and you will not hear them in any way even hint at that it might be boring. Because it's not. They are just as thrilled as the day when they started. In fact, probably more so, because they've learned even more about God. And they've learned that there's even less about Him than what they thought they did before. And yet they've learned so much more in the same process. God's goodness surrounds us. We cannot escape it. Try it. Just try to escape His goodness. Go to another country. You know, a lot of times when we talk about the blessings of God, I notice we often speak about the blessings we have in America. Well, go to another nation. Go to Cuba. Go to North Korea, or go to China, where you can get in a lot of trouble doing what we're doing right now. And you'll still be surrounded by God's goodness. It's impossible to escape it. Whatever the Bible says is good about God, and what He does for us, will be true even in that harsh society of North Korea. Because His goodness comes to us from every possible source, especially in the Spirit. In verses 7 through 9, David continued the theme of God's generosity, which is precious to us. Therefore, he says, you know, like little chicks, we gather under the loving wings of God. Have you ever seen little chickens do that? Little baby chicks? I have, and it's cute. It's almost hilarious. We had a neighbor who had a chicken and then had chicks. And when they would come out of their pen, and they would, if they sensed you coming or whatever, they would quickly find shade to get under. And of course, they would like to be under their mother in particular. We do the same thing with God. See the picture of God's kindness toward us. Look at verse 8. He steadfastly, He abundantly satisfies us with the fullness of His house. You have visited a rich man's house before, but you couldn't enjoy it all. It wasn't yours. It belongs to someone else. But with God, we enjoy the fullness of His house. Whatever His house is, we enjoy it all. In fact, there in verse 8, it also says, He gives us drink from the river of His pleasures. You know, in the original Hebrew that David wrote this, the word for pleasures right here also appears in Genesis, but is translated Eden. The Garden of Eden is the Garden of Pleasures. Live in God's house, and as the first half of verse 8 speaks, and God will give you drink from the river of His Eden. And the true Eden is waiting for us up in heaven, But we can still enjoy many of its pleasures right now in the Spirit as we drink from God's wonderful blessings. In verse 9, David pointed out that God is our fountain of life. Like drinking from the cool, refreshing, pure waters of a spring in the heat of summer that hasn't been polluted yet. He is our life. Now notice at the end of verse 9, it's interesting the way that David puts it. By God's light, we see more light. By light, we not only see more, but we see other sources of light. With light comes more light. Contrary-wise, the wicked commits crimes because he believes these things about himself. Look again at verse 2. For he flatters himself in his own eyes. When he finds out his iniquity and when he hates. He has a high view of himself, not a low one, as is commonly believed today. He likes his evil. Verses 10 and 11. Now say this. Oh, continue your loving kindness to those who know you, and your righteousness to the upright in heart. Let not the foot of pride come against me, and let not the hand of the wicked drive me away. Based on the truths of verses 5 through 9, David pled for the Lord to continue what he had been doing. God, here's all the ways you've been blessing me. Please continue to do so. I have troubles with wicked people. Save me from the wicked. And continue to pour out upon me. Continue to baptize me in your blessings. I need your help every day. It sounds like David enjoyed God and his blessings. Have you ever thought about or even talked about that before? Or even just thought about it? Enjoying God. Psalm 37, the next psalm, which I'll be covering here shortly, encourages us to delight in God. Is that a new idea? Is that a new idea to talk about delighting in God? About celebrating God? It shouldn't be. David wanted protection from the wicked, from the way of the wicked that he mentioned in verses 1 through 4. Because the wicked criminal is not impressed with the righteous man or woman's trust in God. Therefore, he needed help from God. But this is where the wicked fall. Now, as he says in verse 12, there the workers of iniquity have fallen. They have been cast down and are not able to rise. Do you see why the workers of iniquity have fallen? God is not in the minds of the wicked. Therefore, they cannot keep from falling. This would even be true of those who are not what we might call criminals. You know, if someone's not a child of God, his goodness, while that is good, is not rooted in the Lord. And so eventually he will fall. But here, David, I think, is implying that God is the one who casts down the wicked and the criminal, and they cannot rise. So, you know, where shall I place myself? Shall I be as the wicked or as the righteous? Let us have the attitude toward God that we will fear him and respect him for what he is, for who he is, and for what he does. But look at the irony of the wicked here. Is that God knows the way of the wicked. He thinks that he's getting away with it. But that's not the case at all. Verses 1 through 4, God through David revealed even the thoughts and the ways of the wicked. Ironically, the wicked thinks that God and perhaps others are not aware of this. He believes that God does not know or does not care or is not there. But look at David. It almost sounds like he was outside when he wrote Psalm 36. He looks at the clouds floating by. He sees the great majestic mountains. He
He sees the sea in the distance. He sees shadows around him. And he looks at a river. And the only thing he can think about is God. Everything in nature, everything in creation, he knows is the result of the Creator, so it reminds him of the Creator. He uses everything that's before his eyes to picture God's greatness and God's wonder. Do we sometimes look at nature and see nothing but natural processes? I'd encourage you to do what David did. There was a song that was popular a few decades ago, and one of the last verses went like this. It's like a tear in the hands of a Western man. Tell you about salt, carbon, and water. But a tear to an Oriental man, he'll tell you about sadness and sorrow or the love of a man and a woman. The mind of the flesh versus the mind of the Spirit. Let us all have the mind of the Spirit. Let us look at our surroundings and be reminded of God and characteristics of Him. We cannot escape Him, so why not run to Him? He's running after us. He says, I love you. Why keep running away from Him? Why not stop and turn around and say, God, I'm sorry. I love you. I accept your love. What do you want me to do? He says, I want you to follow my Son, Jesus Christ, with your entire being. I want you to be immersed in water, and when you do that, I'll forgive you of all of your sins. And then just keep walking with me, and you'll do just fine. If you're ready to do that, come forward right now, please, as we stand and sing.